Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the LIMES Women in Science podcast.
Here we talk to interesting women, men and non-binary scientists about their careers, lives, ups and downs in order to inspire our fellows to find their own path, either inside or outside academia. My name is Judith Eberhardt. I am a PhD student in the lab of Professor Irmgard Förster at the LIMES Institute of the University of Bonn. Today I want to welcome Dr. Johanna Huhrmann. With her we will talk about her professional experiences in academia and how it impacted her personal journey. Johanna did her PhD at Linköping University in Sweden on the modulation of allergic disease throughout childhood, and she recently transitioned onto a new career path. Hi Johanna, thank you for joining our podcast.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Today we would like to talk to you about your professional but also personal experiences while pursuing an academic career and how the topic burnout impacted you, which is quite interesting for most of us because sometimes it can be a little bit much in academia. And we would like to know more about how it affected you. Let's start from the beginning. What inspired you to become a scientist first?
I think there were many things, actually. But first of all, I would say it was my own motivation or my own curiosity about the world around me, and especially then the human body. I think it's always been really interesting to understand what is it about the body that makes it work, and what is it about the body that doesn't make it work when it's ill or sick. So I think that's like the first thing, and that came from a really early age on. But another thing was obviously a role model of mine, which was a teacher from high school, and she had a PhD herself. She taught biology for us, and she was so inspiring in her teachings. I mean, we learned things that were basically university knowledge. When I came to university later, she had taught us PCR. I think we even did Sanger sequencing, gel electrophoresis. I mean, and she just shared this knowledge with such enthusiasm that I just felt I need to do this too. I really want to do this. And so I think that was my main inspiration, what got me there. And then, of course, I realized throughout school that the natural sciences were those topics that were most interesting to me and made me even always want to know more.
Can you tell us a bit about your career path? And you started actually in Sweden and not in Germany. And why did you transition to Germany?
Okay, so I think we have to really take it from the beginning. Then I'm born and raised in Sweden. And when I finished my high school studies, when I graduated, I went to Germany. And it wasn't really because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wanted to study biomedicine. I knew that already. But I just didn't have the energy for it, to be honest. I wanted to do something else for a while. So I went to Germany as a volunteer through a EU-funded project. And in this year, I met a guy who ended up being my husband. And this is one of the many reasons why I've always returned to Germany, as you will hear now. So after that year in Germany, I went back to Sweden to study biomedicine, as I had planned. And I did that at Uppsala University. And after 2 years, I realized I wanted to go back to Germany. And I missed my boyfriend a lot. But I also I missed the culture. So I ended up in an Erasmus exchange and went to the University of Würzburg, where I did my Erasmus exchange for a year, and then I stayed for another year to work there. And after that, I went back to Sweden again to make my master's in medical biology. And I actually did not plan to make a PhD. I did not have so many positive role models from my time in Germany, where it was actually the first time that I got like a lot of contact with PhD students. So I had actually made up my mind. I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But then I came to Sweden, I did my master's there, and I had a great 2 years with my study mates, but also found my later professor for my PhD, my main supervisor. And in her group, we did research on the development of childhood allergies and if you could prevent these already from pregnancy, but also throughout the course of childhood and adolescence. So that was another person then who obviously inspired me then to keep on doing research, because as I said, I did not plan to from the beginning, and then I ended up there anyways. when I finished my PhD, which was really in the burning times of the pandemic in the end of 2020, I wasn't really sure what to do later on, but I was thinking a bit more about making postdocs, or a postdoc at least. And by chance, I ended up in making a postdoc in COVID-19 research, which was a really interesting change of perspective, doing something else. And after that experience, I felt, okay, I should also try to go abroad one last time. Maybe not one last time, but it felt like, you know, at a certain age, you come to think of when you move abroad, it takes a lot of energy. You need to, you know, you need to change your culture, you need to change your whole life, and you need to adapt to a completely new environment starting from scratch. So I figured if I'm ever doing this again, it should be now, because later on, you never know how life might end up and energy levels are not the same.
That's true.
So I then started looking for a postdoc abroad in all the German-speaking countries. And I had several different positions coming to mind and also some possibilities. But then I actually ended up then here in Bonn for an international postdoc. So this is then the reason why I'm here now, actually. But presently, I'm actually working in the industry. I transitioned last fall into the pharmaceutical industry, working then as a medical advisor or medical affairs manager for AstraZeneca.
Okay, thank you very much.
Now we come to the main topic of our podcast today. It is a topic that is affecting a lot of people in our modern society, including academia, but also outside of academia. It's called burnout syndrome. You experienced it, and you are so nice to talk about it in this podcast with us. And I would just like to tell us a little bit how it was manifesting in your case and how you realized you had burnout.
I think it's an important point that you're making, that it's a societal problem. And I think that's also like the core of the problem, even in academia, that we can work and be active basically endlessly or limitlessly. And I think that is the main point here, that we do not take care of ourselves. I would say that burnout is, it's not the stress actually that is the problem, but the lack of rest is what brings us there in the first place. So I think that's a good take-home message in general here. It's really about the lack of rest rather than stress, because stress is all around us all the time. But regarding the symptoms, I must say I did not realize probably in the moment that those were symptoms of burning out. And I think another thing was that there were several reasons why I also kind of ignored them. I can come into it a little bit later, why I did it. But it started really physically, I would say, that I would sleep really bad. I would think about work or university at that time, even at night. I would have headaches and migraines, stomach problems. I could have like feel my heart racing. That was often in the night then as well, which was really tough to bear because you're thinking something is physically wrong with you. What else was there? I mean, there were many things actually that, yeah, I mean, of course, yeah, I had, in the end when it got worse, I also had a lot of anxiety attacks and panic attacks. And I think when it was as far as it could go before I realized I had to do something, I was in a true depression even. A depression and exhaustion. I was exhausted beyond what I could have imagined is possible.
And that was the point where you said, okay, I'm done now, I have to do something, or?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I must say yes and no. And maybe to explain it, I guess I would have to tell you a bit about how I reacted to it and when I started realizing what was going on and when I actually did something about it. So this year is actually about 10 years ago that this started. It was a time when I had just finished my master's. Me and my still boyfriend then at the time, but still the same guy. We had just moved to a new apartment, which I was really, really happy about. He had also gotten into a master's program in Sweden because he had come then to Sweden to me. So in essence, my life was at a really good level. I also knew that I would start a PhD in the fall. So I had everything basically off the checklist. And that summer, I spent most of the nights sleepless and crying. I had everything, but I wasn't happy. I cried and I did not know why. I was tired. I was really, really tired. And I was like, what, 25, 26? So you're thinking like, how can this be? I'm so young. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. There's probably nothing wrong. So I think at the moment then, it was my husband then who said, like, I think you need to do something about this. He's been my greatest support in life anyways, but in these hard times he has always been there and telling me, like, you maybe should do something about this, this does not work out. So at the time I remember taking some mindfulness course, and I started doing yoga, and I also had some type of psychological support from the university. But after I actually also on top of it had a short vacation already at the beginning of my PhD, I kept pushing on because I was ashamed, to be honest. I was ashamed that I was at that an early time point in life so exhausted that I could not handle my life really well or take care of my health actually. And my, you know, it was like a failure to me. I felt like how could it be possible that I was burnt out before my PhD started or just at the beginning. So after I had taken all these measures, I actually just basically went on and pushed forward for a couple of more years before I actually hit the wall. So I think it took almost 3 years. It was done in the spring of 2016. I started noticing after Christmas there, 2015, that I was really, really tired. But I just figured, it's been a long year. We had married in the year before and there were many projects at the university. I'd been traveling a lot. I was in approximately what I should have been, like the middle of my PhD. So things were going on, but things were also going really well. Mm-hmm. I was invited as a speaker for my work as a PhD student, which was really honoring. And I was going to 2 or 3 conferences in that spring. And I just did not have any energy left. And I started realizing that. And I talked to my boss about it. And she's been also a really huge support in this, in realizing what I needed to do and how to get out of it. But then what happened in that spring was that I had panic attacks very often. I lost also the joy of the things that make me happy in life. And I think that was the worst part. It was never for me personally so that I did not want to live. I was not suicidal, but I had no joy in doing the things that I love the most. That included like eating. I really enjoy eating. I couldn't care less. Or doing sports. I love doing sports. I couldn't care less about it. There were so many things. And I also felt like all the feelings that I felt that were positive, they were really muted. But all the feelings that I had that were negative, they were so loud and they were just screaming, basically. And at some point, I also was, of course, another symptom of it, I was sick a lot. I had a lot of infections. So I had like 4 or 5 infections after each other, there was nothing left to be taken. I barely could get up in the morning. I could not muster enough energy to empty the dishwasher. So somewhere there, I realized this has to stop.
How did you react when you realized that you had burnout or burnout syndromes? And what steps did you undertake to cope with it?
When I was at the point where I realized it doesn't work at all, as I said, I had already throughout this whole period when I was feeling suboptimal, I would say, I had talked to my boss. So I had her support and her permission also to get help from the university. I don't know what you call it, but healthcare maybe. So I actually went to the general practitioner from the university, and I got to go on sick leave for a rather long time, 400%. And then I also got help through a psychologist, also through the university, where I actually met a psychologist, I think, for a time period of a year, 1.5 or so. It started, I think, like once a week, and then once every 2 weeks or once a month. So I think that was the first step that I had to really say stop. I would have to put all my projects on hold, try to find a way back to being me. Because it was also an identity crisis, of course, because I had worked my whole life until then to become a scientist or starting a PhD. It had been my life dream, one of them. So when I fell into this, when I actually got home and I had in total 4 months of sick leave for 100%, I had a lot of time reflecting on actually all of my choices in life. How did I end up here? Why am I doing this? Why doesn't it work? Also, I questioned a lot of my relationships. I questioned how I react or how I interact with other people, because I had to understand which things in life take energy and which things in life give me energy right now. Because it was not the things that traditionally gave me energy that gave me energy anymore. So I had to start rationalizing, which meant I lost some friends because they did not understand or they could not bear with me being so strict on that I couldn't I couldn't reach out anymore as often as I wanted. I was often a person who called and asked, how are you doing? What's going on? But not so many called me back. So I stopped with many things like that. But then I also had to find a way back to what gives me energy at the moment. So I, maybe against the recommendations of the doctors, I should have gone walking every day, because I could not exercise anymore as I wanted to, because it really broke me down. I often got sick afterwards. So he said, but you should maybe go walking. But I think in the end, what I mostly did in those first 4 months where I was at home a lot, I realized the only thing that really still gave me energy, which was quite paradoxical, was reading books. I could read the thickest of books and just, I guess I got like an escape from reality for a while. But, you know, starting reading a paper, like a research paper, it wouldn't have gone. I wouldn't have managed two sentences and my brain would have felt like it was on overload. But reading books really worked out. So that's something I spent a lot of time with on the couch. I did not move very much. I did not exercise a lot. So I must say, when I had come to the point where I had accepted this is what it is now, I don't know for how long it will be like this, I had to come through all my doubts. Will I ever come back to living a life where I can have a job that is inspiring and motivating me and wanting me to get better and where I can make a difference, but still also have enough energy to actually just be human on the side of it, being with my friends, spending time with my husband, going exercising again, or just exploring, being curious, because I had lost those things. I had no joy in living, in a sense. So that's something I had to learn along with all of these sessions that I had, of course, with the psychologist, but also with my environment, I would say, all these discussions.
Yeah, so how did your environment react? I mean, you mentioned a few things, but overall?
Yeah, firstly, of course, my husband, my family, my closest friends, they were so supportive and really basically where I could not give myself permission to relax and rest and go back, they helped me doing it. So that is, I mean, that was the main point. And also, of course, from my work, from my main supervisor, and both my supervisors, actually, not only my main supervisor, who supported me. Also from work, I must say, it was really interesting. The colleagues were mainly really, really supportive. Some maybe did not understand how I ended up here, because I guess they didn't know me very well. Interestingly, I think, and what surprised me was that the men at work were better at handling my burnout and that I was missing than some of the females, not all of them. Because they were just, you know, coming to me, telling me that they miss me at work and that they had similar experiences. And that was something I was surprised about. But as I said, I was rationalizing a lot. And some friends that I thought were close, they just couldn't bear that I had so much to handle myself, that I just didn't have the energy to ask them how they are doing all the time, that they just, either they stopped talking to me or they were really irritated that I just didn't, I wasn't as before. And I think that's something that was also quite difficult. I had to kind of change my identity a little bit. Not only for me, myself, how I perceive myself, but also how others then started perceiving myself, because I was the one who always cared, who always asked, who always said, yes, I will do it. And now I had to start saying no. I would have to say honestly to myself, what is important to me? That's why I would say these reactions were all different, but I think also the whole experience of this burnout has been one of the most character building experiences of my life that still impacts me today on a day-to-day basis, on how I think about work, how I think about life, how I think about things in life that are important.
That's really interesting. To the next question, does the university provide any kind of support for mental health issues? You already mentioned a few things that you saw your personal psychologist. Yeah, whatever, aside from that?
I think that it's different from university to university. And this was also in Sweden, I must say, so maybe there's a difference there. But I suppose that the university here in Bonn, for example, also might have something similar. Because I think this is something that this awareness is much bigger now than I think it was 20, 30 years ago, that it really is a massive problem. So I think if one thinks that one has problems going this direction, so I would first see if there is something at a university. I cannot tell if every university has it, but many have it, because it is truly human to end up there in the way society looks today.
Yeah, maybe we should look into that, because I wouldn't know that the university has something like this, but I didn't check, so...
Yeah, no, I think it's worth looking.
Yeah,
and I mean, I got to know about it through my boss who knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, talking, I think, is always the first part, talking to someone that you trust and then see. Because they, I think in the conversations is where you also get to basically reflect upon yourself a bit. And then you also get feedback, which is like, have you talked to? Is there maybe a general practitioner that you can go to, like a doctor that you can meet through work? Or do you have to take it on, like, on your private side? It's also possible. But I had the opportunity to do it through work, which made it much easier, because then they could really, you know, there was always a follow-up. I would also have meetings every now and then with my main supervisor, with the psychologist, with the doctor, with someone from HR. And I was there as well, of course. So, I mean, we would discuss, how is it looking now? How do we work forward? Because when I was on sick leave for 100%, I got back stepwise, starting on 25%. And then we evaluated, can we go further now or later? And then we would adapt it to where I was, until I then, in the end, actually ended up being on 100% again.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of getting back there.
It helped me, but it really, and I think it all boils down to, it really boils down to the support you have around you, either if it is your boss or if it is your family or wherever, someone who helps you. But I think the structural support system that I had at the university through my boss and the university itself made me actually able to finish my PhD a couple of years later, which I, at the time when I was on sick leave, did not think. I could not see how I possibly could ever lead a normal life again, because I was so tired and I couldn't think a thought from the beginning till the end. Of course, I was depressed. There is no way you're thinking like rationally when you're depressed. Of course, everything is more negative than it truly is, and everything that possibly could be positive feels much less positive.
Studies show that women are more likely to experience mental health issues, including burnout, in an academic environment. Do you have an opinion on why that happens?
I think that is a difficult topic, because I don't know if it's possible to generalize like that. There are also studies showing that women, it's easier for them to get help for mental issues, whereas for men, it's more difficult to get help for mental issues. But when it comes to physical maladies, they get help more readily than women. So I think, on the one hand, I would say maybe there are not many differences between men and women. It's more about the personal differences, like in personalities, how you are. Because I think many people landing in academia are, of course, ambitious. They want to come forward. They strive for excellence. They strive for understanding things that are unknown, which is a difficult task to take on. On the other hand, I can also see that academia, from the beginning, was a system built by men for men. And many of these traditions or support systems are still upheld by men, especially still looking, I think that's true for both Sweden and Germany and other countries, that the proportion of men who are professors is still higher than women, because at some point, probably around the postdoc level, I would say, where you need to decide, can you still keep on doing this or not, women are sorted out, because all of these things happen at a point in life when you also start thinking about, do you want to get married, do you want to have children, do you want to build a home, really get settled, you know, set in your roots, buying a house.
What is your advice for people working in the scientific environment to avoid burnout, or maybe to see when the time has come to react?
The time to react is always now. And I think that is irrespective of if you're feeling like, oh, maybe I'm in the beginning, so to speak, of this gradient of burning out, or if you're actually at the wall. Because the only thing that you can actually make something about is the now. The right now. And what you can do in the present, that is see to that you get rest. And that is not as easy as it sounds. It's not like, oh, I go to the spa now, or I will do this and I will do that. I think it's about being truly honest with yourself and understanding what parts of life give you energy and what parts don't. And when you have identified that, try to really plan time for those things that give you that rest that you need.
And maybe also do them, because I can remember, so resting for me is something different than for other people. For example, if you say rest, I imagine, I don't know, lying on the couch and doing nothing. But I need rest for my brain. So I need to think about something else, something different from work. And this only happens when I do sports, go outside, meet friends, do something new I never did, because my brain is then too overwhelmed with the new thing to think about the problems at work. So this is rest for me.
Yeah.
But for other people, this can be something completely different, like meditation or yoga or something like that.
Definitely.
So it's really important, I think, to figure out what, yeah, as you say, what gives you energy and not just do nothing, because that was my main problem.
Things. And I think another thing that we often do, and I think that is actually irrespective of if we're in academia or not having enough breaks. And then I mean breaks that make give you something. It could be sitting and having coffee with a colleague. It could be having a short lunch walk. It could be watching a fun clip on YouTube. You know, it can be anything. And that's really, I think, as an adult, I think there's many things that you probably should know that we did not learn. And I think this is the one, what is it that we need personally out? And I think just realizing that you are is the first step. The second step is, what do I do about it if I don't want to stay here where I am right now? And it's not easy. And I think it's something that you always come back to in one point or another in life. It's not the stress itself that is the problem. It's the lack of resting, the lack of actually regaining energy, refilling and recharging your batteries that is the problem. So I think that is the main advice I would give. Try to find out what is really helping you getting that energy back.
And maybe as a last question, what are the things you wish you had known before starting into science in general?
That's a difficult question, actually, because I think as with many other things in life, you live life forwards, right, and you understand it backwards. But looking then backwards and seeing what I wish I would have known, yeah, well, first of all, maybe that having a job in academia is also just having a job. It does not have to be your whole life if you don't make it to. Because all of the things we do, and this is something my husband just told me the other day, we mostly do this actually voluntarily. You know, we go somewhere for 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, whatever, and get paid for it. And mostly we also, you know, we did not sign these contracts under threat. We signed them ourselves, and we decide ourselves how we actually act and react at work. So that would be one thing, I guess, just to understand that it is just a job like any other else, and you can still make it well. I think that's something I had to learn, that you can still be really good at what you're doing and being passionate about it between 8 and 5, Monday to Friday. You can still be really, really good at what you're doing. And maybe it is because of those breaks that you are that good at it. And I think the other thing I wished I would have known, and I think that might be more of a personal thing. I don't know if it goes for everyone in academia, but I can see how I, at the beginning of my PhD, was doing basically everything not to make mistakes. And what happens then is that you miss out on learnings. So I think with that, I would also take that with me, that it is completely all right and even necessary for scientists to constructively make mistakes, because that is when we actually find out what is not known.
Thank you very much. We come now to the rapid questions, where we'll fire you 10 questions and I expect just a very short answer. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, starting easy. Hot chocolate or cold beer?
Okay. This would be a funny one, because I don't eat chocolate.
Okay.
And at the moment, I cannot really drink beer either, because it contains gluten, but I would go for the cold beer if I would choose.
Okay, nice. PhD or postdoc?
Oh, that was a tricky one. Ooh. I will not make a choice, sorry. I learned very much in both, so I would go for both then.
Nice, as you did, actually.
Yes, exactly, as I did.
Nice. Mouse research or human research?
Human research, every day of the week.
Hering or Schnitzel?
Hering.
Epigenetics or metabolism?
Epigenetics.
Fast or far?
Far.
Mountains or sea?
Mountains.
Science passion or career?
Science passion.
Dogs or cats?
Cats.
Swedish academia or German academia?
Swedish academia.
Nice, that's it. Okay, thank you very much, Johanna, for sharing with us your experiments and for raising the awareness of the mental health in a scientific environment. It was a pleasure talking to you, and we wish you all the best on your new career path. Stay in touch.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and do reach out if you have any questions.
We will.
Thank you.
The music for our podcast was composed and performed by Dr. Klaus Wunderling and Professor Aliona Pimeninskaya.